Hello, this is a special Microbiology Today edition of the podcast. The Society's magazine, Microbiology Today, focuses on arboviruses and their vectors. In this episode, we discuss some of the prevention strategies and ways of managing arboviruses, and specifically their vectors, which is often the primary focus. We talked to two of the microbiologists featured in the latest issue of Microbiology Today to find out more about how to tackle arboviruses and their vectors.
Okay, my name's John Carr, and I work on the viruses which are transmitted to plants, especially those transmitted by insects such as aphids and related insects called whiteflies and leafhoppers. Aphids are the most important insects, or arthropods for that matter, that transmit viruses to plants. For plants infecting arthropod transmitted viruses, most of these viruses are transmitted by arthropods, especially insects that have probing mouthparts, because these mouthparts are like fine needles that can penetrate the cells of a host and deliver these virus particles relatively undamaged into a cell where the virus can begin to replicate. There are a few exceptions. There are a few chewing insects that can transmit viruses, but these viruses tend to have resistant coat that enables them to withstand all the damaging chemicals that are in the insect saliva. In fact, when you see dead areas of tissue on a virus-infected host, that is usually evidence that the plant is trying to defend itself against the virus, and small groups of cells are committing suicide to prevent the further spread of the virus to the rest of the plant. So this can be determined by certain genes that the plant carries. The best studied systems are where you have a sort of single, what they call dominant gene, which defines resistance to a particular type of virus or a virus strain. But there are also different degrees of resistance where you may have quite a lot of plant genes, each defining some small part of a resistance mechanism.
So can you breed the plants to offer resistance to then protect the plants from arboviruses?
You can, and people try and do that. The thing is, of course, a virus is very often going to overcome resistance to develop a new strain. Sometimes it's also quite difficult to breed resistant plants using conventional techniques of doing crosses, especially if the resistance phenomenon is initially discovered in a wild relative of a crop plant, or in fact if it's discovered in a completely unrelated plant, then of course you can't breed it in at all by conventional means. You could move genetic material from a distantly related plant into your favorite crop plant, for example. It doesn't always work so easily because sometimes these natural resistance genes need to be in a certain context, but there are ways of further modifying them so that they sort of fit in better in the new background. But the most successful way of making genetically engineered plants that are resistant to viruses was discovered about 30 years ago, which is to take a piece of a virus genetic material and take that gene and put it in a plant that expresses in the plant. And what people discovered was that this very often results in the plant exhibiting a sort of resistance, which is an aspect of a natural resistance called RNA interference or RNA silencing. So that's how this RNAi phenomenon was discovered. So that's actually quite a successful method, but it's sort of never caught on, and for various reasons, I think, partly to do with whether or not genetic engineered crops are acceptable, and also whether or not a company could make enough money by selling plants which are resistant.
Are they the main difficulties? Is it people's perception?
It might be people's perception. Again, this is just my personal thought, is that since most plant viruses are transmitted by insects and other arthropods, a company, of course, would make more money by selling a pesticide than by selling a plant which is intrinsically resistant. So I think that there's two pressures there. So in a country such as the US, which has been quite accepting of genetically modified plants which are resistant to herbicides or resistant to insects which are not easily dealt with using insecticides, maybe there hasn't been quite the incentive to take this technology on against viruses. The reason people are becoming less enamored of pesticides is really that although they're cheap, they have been extremely successful, but the problems are, one, the insects eventually start to show some sort of resistance. So again, the insects evolve to be more resistant to these pesticides. Second, people tend to discover that each generation of pesticide that comes along may have some downsides. So these could be related to the health of the people using the pesticide, or it could be related to the environmental impact of the pesticide. So at the moment, the number of insecticides available for crop protection are relatively few, and the one that people thought was the least damaging, a group of chemicals called neonics, turn out to be very harmful for beneficial insects like bees. So although you can control to some extent insect transmitted viruses with them, they have these downsides. And I suppose an additional thing is that there are some viruses that get transmitted by aphids and whiteflies, which are transmitted so quickly that the virus is already transmitted by the time the insecticide kills the insect, so they don't work so well in some cases. Plants emit smear chemicals, substances that might attract or repel insects. We emit semiochemicals too. There are chemicals that are usually volatile chemicals which are emitted into the air and might attract, say, mosquitoes or transmit our viruses. So we've become interested in plant semiochemicals because we and a number of other groups have noticed that when plants are infected with the virus, sometimes they start emitting these volatile organic compounds, these semiochemicals that attract insects. So the insects become more attracted to a virus-infected plant, and then they stop to settle and feed on the virus-infected plant. And this encourages the insects to pick up the virus. The other funny aspect of it is very often these plants, although they smell nicer to the insects, they taste worse. And what that does is, having brought the insects onto the plant, having caused the insects to, try a little bit of feeding, then when the insect realizes the plant tastes rather nastier than usual, it then goes away. Of course, it carries virus particles with it, therefore you can accelerate an epidemic of a plant virus in this way. So that's what made us interested in them in the first place. The reason people are quite interested in studying these more are, if you could either breed plants or engineer plants which had a different bouquet, a different mixture of these semiochemicals, it might discourage these vectors, these arthropods, from settling on the plants. Alternatively, if you understood much better the composition of semiochemical mixtures, perhaps you could generate decoys or traps to inhibit the spread of arthropod-transmitted viruses. Generally, we've been collaborating with scientists in East Africa, especially at the Biosciences East Africa, East and Central Africa hub in Nairobi. And we've been collaborating on trying to produce mixtures of crops focusing on common bean, which is an important staple part of the diet there, to see if effectively we can move the aphids in this case towards decoy crops away from the main crop. So that work is in progress at the moment. And the reason we're taking this approach is it doesn't need pesticides. It works quite well with the way farmers work at the moment. They like having mixtures of crops in any case. It would be very inexpensive because you don't need any particular special inputs like pesticides.
Targeting of the microbes can help control the insect vectors too. We spoke to Eva Krosczek at the University of Liverpool to find out about her research.
So my name is Eva Krosczek and I'm a research fellow at the University of Liverpool. I'm interested in the mechanism of Wolbachia insect interaction and virus blocking by Wolbachia. And Wolbachia is this antiviral symbiont of insects, and it is very important because mosquitoes, vectors of diseases, are insects, and Wolbachia can make them virus-free. And healthy mosquitoes do not transmit diseases to humans, and so the world can become a better and healthier place. So I work on fruit flies and their viruses as a friendly, non-biting model for dengue arbovirus interaction, and I want to know how Wolbachia viruses and insects interact. So Wolbachia can be used in arbovirus control in two main ways. First, it can reduce the numbers of mosquitoes in a population by inducing mating incompatibility. So if there are no mosquitoes, there can be no mosquito-borne diseases. The second way in which Wolbachia helps with arboviruses is by inducing this virus blocking. So Wolbachia reduces or completely blocks viral replication in mosquitoes, and healthy mosquitoes cannot infect humans, and therefore everyone is happy and healthy. So recent work suggests that both of those ways can help fight arboviruses in the field, and we are looking forward to know the official field trial results.
And what's the mechanism by which the blocking occurs?
So we don't know that yet, and many people, including me, are working on this question for a couple of years now, and for now it's very not clear. There are several factors contributing to the protection, and it's very clear that environmental factors, host and symbiont genetics contribute, but the core, the main mechanism, still remains elusive and out of our reach. So I'm very excited to discover it eventually, hopefully.
And how did researchers find out about the effect of Wolbachia bacteria?
So long before we knew what Wolbachia was, people have observed that certain mosquitoes from the same species cannot have viable offspring together. So later, Wolbachia was recognized as the cause of those mating incompatibilities that are now on field trials to reduce populations of mosquitoes. And antiviral protection was actually discovered by researchers studying antiviral immunity in Drosophila. And there it became obvious that flies infected with Wolbachia are much more resistant to viruses. And this discovery has been quickly picked up by the mosquito researchers who introduced Wolbachia from Drosophila to mosquitoes and shown there that it can also protect from arboviruses. So it started in mosquitoes, went through a Drosophila phase, and then now it's back in mosquitoes. So most insect species probably carry Wolbachia. So there are estimates saying that from 40 to 60% of insect species are infected in the wild with Wolbachia. So if you pick something random from the lawn, it is likely to have Wolbachia. But mosquito vectors of human diseases have long been believed to be bad hosts for Wolbachia. So it was believed that Wolbachia doesn't like to live there. So researchers in Australia have been working for a very long time to infect the main vector of dengue, Zika, West Nile and chikungunya, the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes, with Wolbachia. So they were basically taking it out of Drosophila and trying to inject mosquito eggs in order to establish an infection in this species. And those mosquitoes from with Wolbachia from Drosophila are now on trials in the World Mosquito Program, the biggest initiative using Wolbachia to stop arboviruses. The trial is now pretty much all over the tropics. So it all started in Australia, and then it moved to Brazil, Indonesia, Vietnam, and many other places. So it's in the places where dengue is occurring every year, and the results of field trials, I think, are planned for 21. And this is a virus blocking by Wolbachia. But also there are trials with the incompatible insects, so Wolbachia reducing mosquito populations. And there have now been a report on a very promising trial in China, where all the proper controls were included, and Wolbachia really seems to decrease the number of mosquitoes, of biting mosquitoes in the wild. So the results are promising, and they are pretty much all over the world. So with the trials, we only know the effect on mosquitoes, but what is really important is to know if it really decreases the number of dengue cases and the number of people infected with the diseases. And that kind of data takes a while to collect. And research-wise, I think it's very important to discover the mechanism of Wolbachia-induced pathogen blocking, because the whole program, the World Mosquito Program, relies on this. So, and additionally, if we knew the mechanism, we could control, monitor the frequency of the resistance-conferring trait in the wild, and we could maybe even improve the current initiatives and design transgenic mosquitoes that are resistant to the diseases in a novel way. So I think there's still a lot of research. In terms of mating incompatibility, there are other bacteria that that induce them. There is Cardinium that causes this cytoplasmic incompatibility, so mating incompatibility. There is Spiroplasma that kills males altogether. And it's also a very interesting bacterium. From the antiviral point of view, there are several bacteria that researchers are trying to put into the mosquitoes to make them resistant to diseases. And that mostly happens by so-called paratransgenesis. So you induce basically resistant trait to bacteria and then give that to mosquitoes. And then bacteria colonize mosquitoes, and then they become resistant to diseases. So paratransgenesis is nowadays a very big topic as well. But Wolbachia naturally has already those resistance-conferring traits, so you don't have to really modify it. So it's sold as this non-GMO kind of alternative to all those other approaches. Biggest concern, I think, is the fact that viruses against which it protects evolve very fast. They are single-stranded RNA viruses, and they have very high mutation rate. But so far, all the laboratory experiments have not detected any problems. Doesn't seem like the resistance is going to evolve easily. And also, the field trials are exactly there to establish that. If there is a way for Wolbachia stop having this antiviral effect in the wild. So yes, we will still wait a while to know this definitively. But for now, it looks rather good. So after I do my genetic screen in Drosophila, we're gonna try to translate those discoveries to mosquitoes to check if it's the same. So there is a lot of potential for translation, but it's a bit too early to talk about specific it. Many of those interactions are very likely to be conserved from insects to humans. And because of this, studying bacterial symbiosis can really teach us about our own biology and point us to new ways to control bacterial and fight viral infections all over the place, not just arboviruses in insects. When the mechanisms become clear, we can probably learn much more from them than just this thing about stopping arboviruses.
Find out more about arboviruses and their vectors in the August issue of Microbiology Today, available on the Microbiology Society website. There's also a short animated video explaining what arboviruses are. You can find the video on the Microbiology Society YouTube channel or on microbiologysociety.org.